produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Monday, March 31st, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Oh, and happy 66th birthday to my dad. We hope you enjoyed last weekend's Music Stash. In case you missed it, Cannabis Carry is putting together the last 10 songs from our daily shows and combining them into one weekend podcast for your partying pleasure. Tune in on the weekends and get your ganja groove on. As usual on Monday here at the Stash, it's Pot and Politics Day, so we've got our Reformers calendar right after the news. Then we speak with Keith Strupp, the founder and legal director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Keith brings us some excellent news about Representative Barney Frank, who is championing our cause by submitting a bill to end all federal criminal penalties for possession and nonprofit transfer of small amounts of marijuana. And by the way, it's Representative Frank's 68th birthday today as well. For our musical break, I've got a special treat for you. Saturday night, I caught up with Whammo from the Asylum Street Spankers out of Austin, Texas. The Spankers are a seven-piece Americana folk band that are well-known to the cannabis community, and they've been longtime supporters of Normal. I interviewed Whammo backstage as the band prepared for a show here at Portland's Aladdin Theater. So today's song, We're Winning the War on Drugs, comes from the Asylum Street Spankers' Spanker Madness album, an album filled with nothing but toker-friendly jams like High As You Can Be and Pacalolo Baby. Then, to end up the show, we're replaying our interview with M.L. Mathry on this weekend's important fifth annual clinical conference on cannabis therapeutics in Pacific Grove, California. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Plea deal for Canada's Prince of Pot falls apart. Vancouver, British Columbia. Canada's Prince of Pot believes the Canadian government wants to punish him by blocking a plea deal with U.S. authorities, who want him to face charges of selling marijuana seeds from his Vancouver store to American customers. Canada refused to go along with Mark Emery's deal with U.S. prosecutors to plead guilty in return for the United States dropping charges against two co-accused and allowing him to serve most of the sentence in a Canadian prison, the marijuana activist said on Friday. The BC Marijuana Party founder said Prime Minister Stephen Harper's conservative government is pursuing a get-tough policy on drug use and is upset by his long-running campaign for marijuana legalization. Quote, "They want to make an example of me," Emery told CKNW Radio in Vancouver. "They just don't like me," end quote. Emery was arrested in 2005 at the request of U.S. officials for allegedly selling millions of dollars in seeds to U.S. buyers, mostly by mail order, from the seed business he operated openly in Canada for years. A U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency statement in 2005 hailed Emery's arrest as a blow to the, quote, marijuana legalization movement, end quote, and cited his financial support of pro-pot groups in Canada and the United States. Emery is also charged with money laundering, but he says he can prove he declared all his earnings to the Canadian tax officials and gave most of the profits to charities and political candidates. He is scheduled to appear in a Vancouver court next month, with an extradition hearing likely to start late in the year. Now, this Mark Emery case shows just how crazy the international war on marijuana has become. Emery was openly operating his seed business from a storefront in Vancouver, British Columbia. The Canadian government could have shut him down and arrested him at any time. Instead, Health Canada was actually recommending his business to their medical marijuana patients. Emery's been paying federal and provincial taxes the whole time. The Canadian government certainly didn't object to that. But now the USDEA wants to make an example of him and demands extradition from Canada so he can face a potential life sentence under the mandatory minimums for being a drug kingpin. To the American authorities, every seed he ever sold is treated as a full-grown plant. This was unacceptable to the Canadians because under their laws, Emery would be facing a punishment far less severe. The Canadians rightfully saw turning Emery over to the Americans to be a cruel and unjust punishment. So the Canadians and Americans negotiate this plea deal. Emery will accept a 10-year sentence from the American courts. In exchange, Emery's two co-defendants will be set free. Also, 5 years of the sentence will be suspended, and Emery will serve only the first 45 days in an American prison before spending the remainder of his 5 years in a much safer and more comfortable Canadian prison. However, now that plea deal is denied, not because the Americans thought it was too lenient, but rather because the Americans were insisting that there be no early release from prison for Emery's 5-year sentence. Canadian law forbids a judge from imposing such a guarantee, so Emery is in this strange position where Canada can't agree to the 5-year prison sentence that they want and that he volunteered to serve, and Canada may end up shipping him to the U.S. for life in prison instead. Did I mention this is a guy who sells plant seeds for a living? Normal's weekly legislative roundup. Nebraska. In a major victory for pot law reformers, Legislative Bill 844, which sought to recriminalize minor marijuana possession offenses in Nebraska, has been amended. Under current state law, first-time marijuana possession offenses are punishable by a non-criminal citation and a $100 fine. As introduced, LB 844 sought to impose a sentence of up to 90 days in jail for first-time marijuana offenders. As amended, the proposal would increase the maximum fine for pot possession to $300, but would not impose criminal sanctions. The bill now awaits action from the full legislature. In California, California's Dale Geringer submitted written testimony opposing Assembly Bill 2389, which seeks to require drug testing for recipients of certain state benefits or cash assistance. Geringer will testify before the Committee on Human Services in opposition to the proposal at a legislative hearing on Tuesday, April 1st. Geringer will also testify at an upcoming hearing in support of AB 2279, which seeks to end state employment discrimination against qualified medical cannabis patients. And in Hawaii, the House Judiciary this week passed an amended resolution, HCR 49, which seeks to allow state-qualified farmers to provide medical cannabis to authorized patients. The Senate Judiciary is expected to vote immediately on a separate measure, House Bill 2675, which seeks to establish a legislative task force to study issues pertaining to the legal supply of medical marijuana for authorized patients. And finally, in non-state-related legislative news, several newspaper columnists and editorial boards this week have endorsed Massachusetts Congressman Barney Frank's pending legislation to strip the federal government of its authority to arrest responsible cannabis consumers. Mortgage 101 on landlords and medical marijuana. Now, we've seen this tactic in California by the DEA, where they threaten the landlords who rent to medical marijuana dispensaries, which are legal under California's Prop 215, but illegal under federal law. And back in my own home state of Idaho, I remember a time when my county sheriff proposed requiring all landlords to drug test all prospective tenants because, well, I suppose there aren't enough homeless drug addicts in America or something like that. So as our nation slowly reawakens to her hemp roots, as more states pass decriminalization and medical marijuana laws, more landlords are going to be caught in this bind between showing compassion by renting to a state-authorized medical marijuana patient and breaking federal law by aiding and abetting in the growing and storing of a controlled substance. Well, with that in mind, I found this question and answer segment on a website that was called Mortgage 101, and the answer was surprisingly rational. The question was this: I have always included a clause in my leases that says if tenants use drugs on the property, they're out. I recently smelled marijuana coming from the apartment of a tenant who moved in a few months ago. When I confronted this tenant, he claimed he uses marijuana for medical reasons and said that because even the police won't arrest him for his use, I have to allow him to use it and continue to live here. Is he right? And the answer is the following. If you want to stick to your guns, you'll find several strong legal arguments to back you up. Under federal law, possession of marijuana is still illegal, even in the several states that have passed compassionate use laws. These laws protect people who use marijuana under a doctor's recommendation from criminal prosecution under state statutes. They do not attempt to tell private citizens, such as landlords or employers, how they must react when employees or tenants use the drug on the job or in rented premises, nor do they elevate marijuana to the status of a prescription drug. Let's assume that your tenant meets the definition of a disabled person. He has or is regarded as having a physical or mental disability that substantially limits one or more of his major life activities. He'd be within his rights to expect you to be reasonably accommodating. For example, to regularly remind him of when the rent is due or forgive occasional tardiness if his prescription medication makes him prone to forgetfulness. But many would agree with you that as long as marijuana possession remains illegal under federal law, requiring you to permit its use on your property would be an unreasonable accommodation. Before you conclude that might and right are on your side, however, give this some more thought. First, is this tenant's use causing any problems? If you're observing hordes of nighttime visitors, presumably supplying your tenant or joining them, then you're dealing with a party, not a prescription, which no compassionate use law will insist that you tolerate. Or is your tenant acting bizarrely, leading you to believe he's in a deep and constant marijuana daze? Again, you aren't required to host such behavior on your property. But if your tenant is in all respects a neighborly, conscientious, rent-paying resident, it's beginning to look like no harm, no foul. Assuming your tenant is disabled and has a doctor who has recommended marijuana use, where do you expect him to use it? If every landlord evicts him for simply using the drug, he'll be relegated to back-alley locations in order to not become homeless. The voters in your state probably didn't have that consequence in mind when they exempted medical use from prosecution under state laws. Maybe the truly compassionate thing to do would be to talk with your tenant and explore how he can meet his needs in a more discreet manner. He could start by closing the windows. The number one thing you can do to end cannabis prohibition for responsible adults is to get involved with the activists and organizations in your local area. Get your date book ready to jot down these important events on our normal daily audio stashes, Reformers Calendar. This is your Reformers Calendar for Monday, March 31st, 2008. Monday and Tuesday, March 31st through April 1st, 2008, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Rethinking Treatment, Recognizing and Responding to the Spectrum of Substance Abuse will be taking place at Morris J. Wask Center for Dialogue, 580 West Hastings Street, Vancouver, British Columbia. For more information and to register, see www.keepingthedooropen.com or contact Dave Peterson at dave@devonknight.com. That's DEVONKNIGHT, devonknight.com, or call 604-677-2759. Thursday, April 3rd, 2008, New York City, New York. Drop the Rock Coalition meeting, ending New York's draconian Rockefeller drug laws, will take place at the Correctional Association of New York, 2090 Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard, Suite 200 at 125th Street in New York City. For more information, call Caitlin Dunkley at 212-254-5700, extension 339, or email cdunkley, that's C-D-U-N-K-L-E-E, at correctionalassociation.org. And Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, April 3rd through the 5th, 2008, in Pacific Grove, California, the 5th Annual Clinical Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics, Reentering Mainstream Medicine, will take place at the Asilomar Conference Center in Pacific Grove, California, hosted by Patients Out of Time. For more information and to register, see www.medicalcannabis.com. And if you have events you'd like to hear featured on our normal daily audio stash's Reformers calendar, please send me an email with all of the relevant details. Set the subject line to events and email it to stash@normal.org.
Georgia. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. For 30 years, Normal has been a voice for those Americans who oppose marijuana prohibition. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Well, Monday is Pot and Politics Day here on the Daily Audio Stash, and, you know, we don't always have a lot of good news to report on the political front. There's always somebody trying to recriminalize marijuana or increase some sort of penalty, but today we get to deliver some very good news, and I'm joined by the founder and legal counsel for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, Mr. Keith Stropp from Washington, D.C. Keith, welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be with you, Russ.
Well, let's tell them all about the good news. A lot of people may have caught this on the Real Time with Bill Maher show, but for those folks without HBO who have missed the news, let them know the great news about marijuana in the Congress.
Well, it is big news for us. Like you say, we're accustomed to playing defense a lot. We're trying to beat back stronger penalties and trying to beat back states that are proposing they recriminalize marijuana. So it is pure pleasure for a change to have a member of Congress, especially one who is respected as highly as Barney Frank is, to be willing to introduce a bill finally that takes a significant positive step forward. Representative Frank, in some meetings we were holding a few months ago, made it clear that he felt it was time to get the federal government out of the area of minor marijuana enforcement altogether. In other words, he wasn't trying to presuppose what every state was going to do, sort of like alcohol. Some states will probably maintain stiff criminal penalties if the federal government got out of the field, but others, frankly, would experiment with legalization models and full decriminalization models and letting people grow their own, etc. So Barney finally agreed to introduce a bill that's essentially based on the report of the National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse. That was called the Schaefer Commission or the Marijuana Commission. And it came out back in 1972, and it was the basis that former President Jimmy Carter introduced a bill to decriminalize marijuana back in 1970. I believe it was 73 or 4 was the first year we had the bill introduced. What happened was the mood of the country got more conservative by the end of the 70s and the early 80s, and frankly, no one in Congress any longer had the courage or the inclination to stand up and introduce a marijuana decriminalization bill. So it was only in the 1990s, when we got back to discussing the subject of medical use of marijuana, that Congress got involved at all. But again, until now, since I believe it was 1996 that we got the first federal medical marijuana bill introduced, but it's only been medical use they've been willing to discuss. Well, that's finally going to change. Representative Frank's bill will remove all federal penalties for the possession of up to 3.5 ounces of marijuana, that's 100 grams. By the way, that happens to be the same amount that the state of Ohio decriminalized almost 30 years ago, for example. So it's not radical, it's just a small amount that is a reasonable place to make a distinction between possession for personal use and possession for resale. The bill would also eliminate all federal penalties for the not-for-profit transfer of up to 1 ounce of marijuana between adults. That was also something that was suggested by the National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse. So when you think about it, what Representative Frank is really proposing is that as the federal law, we simply legalize these minor offenses, so we get the federal government totally out of it. And once the federal government is out of it, states are free to do whatever they want, either keep their current penalties or modify them in any manner they might feel comfortable doing. So this is a major shift in focus. It means that over the next year, I hope that we will get Congress to hold hearings not just on the need for the medical use of marijuana, but the need to legalize marijuana for all of us, to stop making criminals out of otherwise law-abiding citizens who smoke marijuana. So we're very happy with this bill. Congressman Frank is due back from a trip to Africa today, and the expectation is he is probably going to introduce the bill later this week. So we will be putting something out, obviously, in our press release when it happens, but at least people can feel good about the fact that for once there's a proposal in Congress that would benefit marijuana consumers.
That's a beautiful thing. And Representative Frank has always been a staunch ally of those of us on the reform side. He's been sponsoring the state's rights to medical marijuana bill for, I don't know how many years, almost
since he came to Congress. In fact, you know, Representative Frank, when he was a state legislator in Massachusetts, also introduced marijuana decriminalization bills in the state legislature. So this is a subject that he acknowledged on the Bill Maher show. He has supported decriminalization for a long time, but as he said himself, he kind of felt like he couldn't push the subject too hard until he got himself pretty well set in Congress, because it was considered pretty dangerous to do so. I think he's been in Congress long enough, and he feels confident about his ability to get reelected, that he just thinks it's time to be honest in this area, and we're delighted.
I think it's good that we point out, too, the idea that federal decriminalization or federal legalization, or I like to call it federal re-legalization, doesn't mean that the states can't have their own penalties. We saw that with the end of alcohol prohibition. There are still counties across the country, some of them that are dry counties, that where alcohol is prohibited.
You're right, Russ, and in fact, I think most of us, when we think about it, would support that kind of choice. I mean, it's a little irritating. I think a time or two in my life when I've been driving across Alabama or Mississippi or one of those southern states, and it seemed terribly strange that you couldn't stop and get a drink unless you were a member of a private club.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way they get around that is that, you know, they charge 25 cents to become a member, and so anybody who stumbles in the door qualifies for membership. But nonetheless, it is true. There are still big chunks of some of the states where they have not legalized alcohol, but most of the states have legalized alcohol. The same thing with gambling. There are still some states that don't allow gambling, but the majority now have gambling on the river or gambling in a river boat or gambling someplace in the state on an Indian reservation. Well, I think the same thing is going to happen with marijuana. Over a period of time, once the federal government backs up and gives the states the option, there are clearly going to be some incredibly strong arguments, financial in particular, why states should want to legalize marijuana. There are studies showing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that could be raised in revenue that's really lost tax revenue today. In addition, you would save tens of millions of dollars just simply by no longer arresting and prosecuting and booking and jailing consumers of marijuana, period. So, yes, I think it's an exciting time. Let's be honest, there's probably not going to be much happen other than get this bill introduced before the election. People are always skittish with an election coming up. But once we have this election behind us, I fully expect we'll have hearings, and certainly in the House of Representatives, we're going to do our best to get a companion bill introduced in the Senate, and we're serious about getting this passed over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. And the one point of this that I also like to point out, you mentioned how the bill would also remove all criminal penalties for the not-for-profit transfers of marijuana under 1 ounce. And, you know, coupling that with the end of a de facto prohibition, what could we see as far as the prices of marijuana? Do you think this would severely affect the underground marijuana economy?
Well, there's no doubt that marijuana should be cheaper at that point, because much of the tax you're paying is a prohibition tax. You're paying money because people are taking enormous risks to grow the marijuana and to get it to you. If it were no longer a crime to grow small amounts of marijuana or to even sell non-for-profit basis small amounts of marijuana, I think that would change the market. I think most of us would find a way to operate within the legal scheme. I suppose there's always going to be a few people that are going to insist on having more than you're allowed to have, or you know, whatever the limit is, they're going to probably have a need to get over it. And if they do, they're still going to be subject to criminal prosecution. But for most of us, frankly, so long as we have a reasonably dependable supply of marijuana, obviously, I'd be happy to buy my marijuana 1 ounce at a time or less, as long as I could do that in a legal manner. So, yeah, I think it's terribly important. Decriminalization on its own doesn't quite make sense. If you simply decriminalize the user, but he has no place to get it, you know, it leaves the tens of millions of users going back to the black market. What this would do would be allow people to grow and sell small amounts of marijuana. Again, the selling would have to be not for profit. But, you know, I think most of us could figure out a way where, four or five friends would get together, and one of us has enough land to grow the marijuana, and the rest of us would pay our share of the cost, and we'd all have a legal supply.
I think it would be a lot like the situation we have here in Oregon with the medical marijuana system, where not-for-profit transfers, any transfers of marijuana aren't allowed for any sort of consideration, and we're swimming in the stuff.
That's true, by the way. I think the Oregon medical model right now might be the closest to what we would end up with under the Barney Frank bill if it passed. That's absolutely true. And it's not perfect, we understand, but it sure is better than what most states have in this country, and it sure as hell would be a lot better than what we currently have under federal law.
Well, we want to thank Keith Straub for joining us here on the Normal Audio Stash. Keith, thanks for keeping us updated.
All right, look forward to talking to you soon, Russ.
Okay, bye-bye. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org.
All right, well, we're backstage here at the Aladdin Theater here in Portland, Oregon, with Whammo from the Asylum Street Spankers out of Austin, Texas, and trying to get the door shut back here so we can get some a little quieter, trying to put this stuff together. But thanks for joining us, Whammo.
Thanks for having me.
And one of the songs that we picked up from you, from your band, was a song called We're Winning the War on Drugs. That's one of the ones you wrote?
Yes, it is.
And how long has this band been together?
We've been together 14 years, 14 long years, running around in vans all over the world.
Yeah. How many more songs do you have like this? Is this a consistent theme with the band, is the war on drugs? And
there is no consistent theme with this band. There's no consistent genre. There's no consistent songwriting style. We just do whatever the hell we want to.
Right on, right on. And have you guys been involved with other events with Normal in the past? Is this?
I got a plaque at home that says I was Normal's Artist of the Year in 1997, I believe, for my album Faster Than the Speed of Suck, which is a theme record about two people riding in a car from Austin to New Orleans, and they can't decide what to listen to on the radio. And at one point, they smoke a joint, and so I think that's what got me the Artist of the Year.
Right.
It's a nice little plaque.
Yeah. Now, a lot of these songs might be inspired by real-life events. Have you ever had any problems with the law involving any sort of situations like that?
I'm knocking on wood right now, and I'm just saying that any policeman listening to the radio right now, we are the Melvins, and... But no, I love the Melvins. I wouldn't want to see them get busted either. So, no, there hasn't been any problem.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. And as far as people being able to follow the band, you guys, how often do you tour? Is this a constant tour?
Seems like it never stops.
Yeah.
And, you know, even, you know, it's like getting a month off is a rare thing. So
over 14 years, almost nonstop touring.
Yeah, it's about 180 gigs a year, so it's half the year. Broken up into tiny little segments.
Yeah, yeah. Are you doing any of the hemp-related festivals this year? Boston Freedom Rally or Hemp Fest or anything like
You're
that?
You're asking the wrong guy. I just get in the van and get to the next gig. I have no idea what I'm doing.
I played music myself for years back in Boise, and my three questions were, what time's the gig, where's it at, when do we get paid?
Right.
That's all I gotta know.
For us, it's more like, what time are we loading out, what time do we sound check? What time are we got to wake up?
Yeah,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, a couple of the other folks coming down the stairs here backstage.
This is Morgan, our new bass player.
Oh, hi, Morgan. Hi. How you doing? I'm Russ from a Normal. I'm with the Normal podcast, just getting some information about the band. So you're the new bass player?
I am the new bass player.
Oh,
yeah.
How long you been with the band?
3 weeks.
Brand new bass player.
Still
all
got
right.
That new bass player smell.
It's great.
It never quite goes away. Well, nice meeting you. Nice
you
meeting
too.
You.
And also coming down the stairs is Charlie King.
Charlie King.
Charlie.
Hey,
Charlie is. Hi, Charlie. I'm Russ with the Normal Podcast. How are you?
Russ, how's it going?
It's going good. And you play?
Yes, often.
Well, that's good to hear. Good to hear. And we'll be getting some of you guys' music up on the podcast as well. And letting
Sweet.
Everybody know how great it is. I was pointing out that song where Winning the War on Drugs was one of the ones that would go really good on the Normal Podcast. So.
Yeah, well, perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have a whole record dedicated to Reefer Tunes.
Oh, really?
It's called Spanker Madness.
Spanker Madness. I saw the t-shirt out front. Looked just like the old Reefer Madness movie ad.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent, excellent. So, well, this is great. Thank you guys for, giving us a little bit of your time here backstage. This will be a great introduction for the music we're going to play on the podcast, and we'll link everybody up. What's your website again?
It's AsylumStreetSpankers.com.
Okay, AsylumStreetSpankers.com. We'll have links to that up at the Normal website at stash.normal.org. And Whammo and the guys, thanks for having us back here.
Got
appreciate it.
Cool.
Let you guys get ready for the show.
In my lazy boy, just watching my TV, there's something that the newsman can't explain to me. Maybe I'm just paranoid as I set my reefer down. If there's a war on drugs going on, how come they're all around? But we're winning the war on drugs, we're winning the war on drugs. Praise the Lord and pass the bomb, we're winning the war on drugs. You can grow them in your backyard or score them off the thugs. Put your hands against the car, we're winning the war on drugs. Tony scored 10 kilos from a pair of shiny black shoes, with an eagle in his haircut and an earphone on his tongue. After he got busted, he couldn't make no bail, 'cause we're making money off the stash and money off the jail. But we're winning the war on drugs, we're winning the war on drugs. Grace Lord and pass them all, we're winning the war on drugs. You can throw them in your basement or score them off the thugs. Put your hands against the car, we're winning the war on drugs. About Bill Hicks and the laughter he creates, about burning all your records 'cause the artists were all baked. On this earth there's flowers, fungus, herbs, and weeds to take. If those things are legal, then God made a mistake. But we're winning the war on drugs, we're winning the war on drugs. Praise the Lord and pass them on, we're winning the war on drugs. You can grow them in your closet or store them off the thugs. Put your hands against the bar, we're winning the war on drugs. Yeah, we're winning the war on drugs, we're winning the war on drugs. Praise the Lord and pass them on, we're winning the war on drugs. You can grow them in your backyard or store them off the thugs. Put your hands against the bar, we're winning the war on drugs.
You're listening to the Normal Audio Stash with Radical Russ.
So in our continuing look at the medical uses of cannabis, we like to turn to the people that are trying to help educate the doctors and nurses, the people who are working in healthcare, to be part of the advocacy for the medical use of cannabis. So today we turn to California, and I'm speaking with M.L. Mathry, who is putting together clinics for doctors and nurses to better understand the medical uses of cannabis. So M.L., thank you for joining us here on the Stash.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this will be, we're looking at April 4th and 5th and you guys are putting on a clinic here and are working to get it accredited. So tell our listeners a little bit about what that means, this accreditation, and what the clinic will be covering, the theme, and what people can expect.
Okay, thanks. This is the fifth in a series of biennial conferences called the Fifth National Clinical Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics, and basically that's what it is. It's not basic research. We really try to get a holistic picture of cannabis as medicine from bringing in some basic research, bringing in clinical trials, bringing in actual patients and physicians who care for those patients. The theme this year we have is cannabis re-entering mainstream medicine. It was chosen for a couple of reasons. The re-entering is to remind people that cannabis was a medicine. It was a very useful medicine for a wide variety of ailments before the prohibition began in the United States. And frankly, now more and more research that is occurring, it's starting to come out as pharmaceutical products in England developing Sativex, which is now available in Canada. Throughout the world, different products becoming available, all of them validating the fact that cannabis, not just the THC as found in the Marinol pill, which is the psychoactive, main psychoactive substance in cannabis, but that the whole plant cannabis, with all of its cannabinoids and other chemicals in that plant, have therapeutic value when put together. And so by being an accredited conference, this is actually a conference that the physicians and nurses can earn their continuing education units that are basically vital in keeping their license current.
Right. Now, these doctors and nurses that attend your clinics, have you found in general that they're receptive to the idea of medical uses of cannabis, or do you receive some opposition from some of the groups out there?
Well, I think what's made the news, back in 2003, the American Nurses Association put out a paper that a resolution that, you know, called for the government to stop the prohibition and allow patients to use it and many other, you know, resolves that go according to getting this medicine available to patients. Just this year, the American College of Physicians finally came on board, and they're the second largest medical professional organization, so they came on board saying the same thing. A lot of healthcare professionals recognize that it has medical value. Depending on where they practice, the state they practice in, the type of practice, because of the legal ramifications of it being a Schedule I drug, there is still much fear about openly talking about it. They're still much, you know, they're still greatly intimidated by the federal government. And frankly, I can tell you that one nurse who spoke at our conference in 2006 met some of that wrath when he returned to his work, and by the basis of him speaking at our conference was literally made to do a drug test.
Now, was that Nurse Ed Glick?
Nurse Ed Glick.
Yeah, I know Nurse Ed and have met him many times. I'm up here in Portland, Oregon, so he's been at a number of our events as well. And, yeah, he spoke at great length about his selective persecution there. Now,
and we've got a nursing shortage now.
Yeah.
And one of the things we try to do at this conference is really, well, it's basic. We know that it does have therapeutic value. So, you know, just as normal understands that the laws against marijuana are ridiculous. And so it's how do you get these laws changed? And from a healthcare professional perspective, you know, I just really push the ethics of it, that it is just unethical. The science is there, and it's really unethical for healthcare professionals to hide their heads in the sand. And when a nurse like Ed, who is a very compassionate nurse, you know, gets scapegoated for it, or, you know, takes the repercussions, and other healthcare professionals are quiet, you know, in the background and not standing up, it's just, you know, all it serves to do is put the fear in other healthcare professionals, and this is, it's not serving anyone any purpose there, because the patients really need healthcare professionals as their advocates.
Now who are the boards or the organizations that accredit these types of clinics?
Well, you have to go through something. Very often it could be a professional like a state nurses or physicians association, society, or it could be, most often it's through a university. And so we're going through the University of California, San Francisco, School of Medicine. And this is the second, they accredited our conference in 2006 when it was in Santa Barbara. And when we suggested the conference for this year, they were wholeheartedly for it. You know, they saw what we did. They think it's very important. And no trouble at all getting the coverage from them. Now, granted, the faculty from the University of California, San Francisco, that who has been our link and on our planning committee has been Donald Abrams, who is just a wonderful, you know, clinician, researcher who looks at you know, cannabis use with, whether it be HIV/AIDS patients, whether it be pain, you know, and he'll be presenting his research, which is, you know, right at the forefront.
Well, most excellent. So there'll be plenty for everyone to learn. Now, does someone have to be a doctor or a nurse to attend this clinic, or is it just open to the public?
Thanks so much for asking that question. No, by all means, this is open to anyone. And again, that's what I mean by it's a little different. We've designed this, and frankly, it's probably because it is a nursing perspective, to give the whole picture and to make it in very understandable terms. We have a lot of patients who come. They urge their healthcare provider to come, and, you know, we would love to see that. But the patients come because they want to be validated. They know it helps them. And, of course, you've heard it as well as we've heard, the government saying that the patients are just pawns of legalizers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're being taken advantage of. And it's like, you know, patients aren't fools. If it helps them start eating, feel better, less pain, spasticity gone, eyesight stays. There are so many things that cannabis does, you know, they can tell.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I always like to say I've been working for Normal since 2005. I have yet to have a patient come up to me and say, "Stop taking advantage of me." That's never happened. Everybody seems to be very happy to be using the cannabis medicine and getting great relief from their symptoms.
The other thing that's different, because we do have this variety of speakers, I mean, it's all geared at the health of it, but it's not just the researchers, you know, the lab researchers, but then it's the clinical researchers, the ones that are doing their research with people as opposed to the animals, and then it's the patients and the care providers. And I think what's really been exciting about this conference is patients, whether they're in the audience or speaking, come and feel validated. The researchers have really appreciated the conference, the ones who are speaking at the conference, because it gives them the full circle, and it kind of, you know, helps them understand how important their research is and that people are willing to listen to it. As you know, there's a lot of research coming out these days. You know, each year you can find hundreds of studies that are coming out, you know, showing some kind of benefit, whether it be in our understanding the system in our own bodies about the cannabinoids that we all humans have, or whether it be how cannabis interacts with the body. And yet, that's not what's making the headlines. You know, so it's going to be an exciting conference in terms of giving people a really good overview of what is known now. And I think this one's going to have quite a thrust on trying to push the professionals to be a little bit more active about, you know, speaking up for the truth, speaking up for science.
Now, let's make sure we fill them in on the details so that they can put this down on their calendar. This is your medical, your accredited clinics. The theme is cannabis reentering mainstream medicine. Let's let everyone know the location and the time and how they can get tickets or get involved in the presentation.
Okay. I'd urge anyone, if they want to attend, to think about registering as soon as possible. There will be some limited seating. It is going to be held at Asilomar Conference Grounds in Pacific Grove, California, April 4th and 5th, two full days of very interesting material. I promise anyone who attends, anyone could find out more about it by going online to our webpage, which is www.medicalcannabis.com. First thing on the page is information about the conference. You can find out who the speakers are, what the agenda is, and register online.
Well, excellent. That gives us everything we need to know. People can get involved, get this marked down on your calendar. This will definitely be worth the time to learn all about the medical uses of cannabis and what we can do to spread the word about cannabis and its medical uses across the 50 states and around the world. I want to thank ML Mathry, who's calling us from Virginia today and setting up that conference in Pacific Grove, California. ML, thanks for joining us on The Stash.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from Henry Ford, the automaker. Quote, "Why use up the forests, which were centuries in the making, and the mines, which required ages to lay down, if we can get the equivalent of forest and mineral products in the annual growth of the hemp fields?" End quote. That's right, Henry Ford was very interested in making cars and car parts from cannabis hemp. It's time we take a look at it again. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning in to The Stash. We'll be back tomorrow with our Government at Work Day. And until then, take care of each other, tokers.